The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host... Normal's outreach coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Wednesday, February 9th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for our show here, the next 60 Minutes podcast, as the Normal Daily Audio Stash, available on iTunes and download on demand at our blog, stash.normal.org. Also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is the lovely and talented Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, Russ. Happy Wednesday. Happy Hemp Day.
Oh, I'm having a good Hemp Day, Hump Day. Glad to have you here. Unfortunately, Ganja John can't join us today. We, of course, have the special Ganja John camera microphone, mini microphone embedded into his false eye so we can check up on him no matter what he's doing. Let's check up on Ganja John right now. Oh, apparently he's chasing some comely lass around a room. She's not wearing very much either. How interesting. Oh, well, Ganja John, we hope you get better. We'll see you on tomorrow's show. Coming up on today's show, of course, it is Wednesday Hump Day, and that means it's Cannabis Science Day with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. You've probably seen these headlines coming out all week long. CNN, WebMD, NPR came out with it today, talking about how there's a new meta-analysis showing that pot causes schizophrenia to come on much earlier in people predisposed to that psychosis. We'll ask Dr. Mitch about the study. He's taken a long, in-depth look about it, and we'll find out if it's really true or if it's just another case of reefer madness. We'll also take your calls for Dr. Mitch Earlywine on cannabis science, health, culture, and history at 971-533-7111. But hold up, that'll come at the bottom of the hour. Also at the bottom of the hour, a little radical rant. We're going to take a look at a case, a stunning case from the Los Angeles County Jail, and a beating of another nonviolent marijuana offender. Today's show also is our Irie Wednesday for our daily Toker Tunes. Grateful Dread Public Radio will join us with some great reggae music. But before we get to all that, we turn to Cannabis Carrie and our hemp headlines. Carrie, what's in the news today?
Well, we touched on it yesterday in the second hour, but we want to get it on tape. Another probation officer is fired just for expressing his views on cannabis law reform. Also, Arizona's health department released the new rules for their program. We're going to go over that. Hawaii has a very promising new decrim bill that is sailing through their committees there. And if we have time, we have one last story about some funny smelling money.
Okay, we'll take a look at that. Coming up in the hemp headlines right after this first break, we encourage you to check out all of our advertisers here at Normal Show Live. They help keep this show free just for you so that you can get the latest news, interviews, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. I'm Radical Russ. It's Normal Show Live. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapist will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
High in the Rockies. For the first time ever, High Times is hosting the Medical Cannabis Cup in the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. Come to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. There'll be cultivation seminars with High Times editors Danny Danko and Nico Escondido, plus other experts and cannabis celebrities. Attend activism seminars with leaders of the medical marijuana movement, including advice on how to start your own cannabis business. Meet industry leaders in medical cultivation, hydroponics, smokable glassware, hemp products, dispensary supply, cannabis accessories, and more. Plus, Medical Cannabis Cups will be awarded to the best indica, sativas, concentrates, and edibles entered by legally operating medical marijuana dispensaries and growing collectives. And don't forget Saturday night when the Medical Cannabis Cup will host the extravaganza with surprise musical guests. The High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, April 2nd and 3rd, 2011 at Exto in Denver, Colorado. Visit medcancup.com for details. Be part of the growing cannabis industry. Come to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Denver.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Last month, we told you the story about a Border Patrol agent, Brian Gonzalez, who was fired for casually expressing his views on drug legalization to a fellow agent. Well, it wasn't just an isolated incident. A deputy probation officer in Arizona was fired less than 2 months after signing a letter calling for the legalization, taxation, and regulation of marijuana. Joe Miller is just the latest law enforcement official to be fired for his view on drug policy. Miller had served as a probation officer for 4 years. Following an 8-year stint as a police officer in Needles, California. Now, back in December of 2009, he had met with a supervisor who told him not to use his position or affiliation with the Mojave County Probation Department to publicly express his personal opinion without a disclaimer stating that it was only his opinion and not that of his department. In September of last year, Miller signed on to a letter in support of California's Proposition 19, along with 31 other retired officers that had worked in some capacity in law enforcement. Then on November 19th, he received a notice from his department that he was under investigation. Along with Superior Judge James Gray and District Attorney Paul Gallegos, Miller was the only actively employed police officer who added their signature on the letter that was written by LEAP. At the bottom of the letter, it did have a disclaimer that said, quote, all agency affiliations are listed for identification purposes only, unquote. Well, that apparently wasn't enough of a disclaimer for the Mojave County Probation Department. After his dismissal in December, Neil Franken, the National Director for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, or LEAP, wrote a letter to Miller's department chief, Friend Walker, that argued the firing constituted a violation of Miller's First Amendment rights. In the letter, Franklin wrote, quote, it is quite clear to me that Mr. Miller termination is in direct violation of his First Amendment rights to free speech. Then he goes on to describe the disclaimer. The disclaimer is used so readers clearly understand that those who endorse the letter are not representing the law enforcement agencies listed, and that the agencies are listed for identification purposes only. This well-established practice has been used with a wide array of petitions and has withstood legal scrutiny and has protected the First Amendment rights of Americans across the political spectrum. Miller said he hopes to file a suit with the Arizona chapter of the ACLU later this month.
Well, it would be a successful suit, that's for sure, because we've seen this time and time again when people are fired for their political views. They've taken these lawsuits, and so long as they've made the disclaimer that they're not speaking for their organization, the place that they work for, they've won the suits. So they're in real trouble here in firing this probation officer for signing on to a pro-legalization statement. But it's just a chilling effect. You got to think about how this affects not just the police officer in this situation, but think about just your everyday average folks like you and me. Well, maybe not so much me, but I'm not going to get fired for talking about legalization. That's my job. But you know what I'm talking about here. You're at work. You're sitting around the water cooler, and maybe somebody mentions that Family Feud thing that we played yesterday where the guy talks about passing around a joint. Do you laugh? Do you laugh a little too hard? Do you watch yourself to make sure that you get the joke, but you don't get it a little too much, if you know what I mean? This is what people are going through every day in the workplace, unable to acknowledge their use of cannabis and their belief that there needs to be an end of marijuana prohibition, and not even necessarily because they fear that they're going to get fired, but even more subtly than that, they could be denied promotions or denied plum assignments and so forth. You know, I lived in that world for too long in a cubicle wearing a suit, always having to wonder, you know, if I'm laughing too much at a joke or if I'm giving too much away with some of my knowledge in just small talk with coworkers. Meanwhile, those coworkers can talk to you all day about the weekend and how they went out and partied and drank so much and got so sloshed and, oh, what a good time they had. And, hey, Russ, won't you come out with us next time and party and have a good time and let your hair down and, well, what hair I used to have. So it does get very frustrating, and it's sad to see that this probation officer loses his job in this situation. But I know the folks at the ACLU will take this to the courts, and they will secure more rights for all of us in the workplace to be able to express our views.
The Arizona Department of Health and Services has released their revised rules for their new medical marijuana program that was approved by popular vote last November. The revised rules place the responsibility of the recommending physicians who must, quote, identify the debilitating medical conditions had by the qualifying patient, as well as provide a statement that the physician agrees to assume responsibility for providing management and routine care of the patient's debilitating medical conditions. That's a mouthful. The physician must also submit a statement that they have established a medical record for the qualifying patient and is maintaining medical records throughout their treatment. The doctor is required to review all medical records for the patient from all other treating physicians within the previous 12 months, as well as reviewing the patient's response to conventional medications and therapies. Now, Arizona is the 15th state in the U.S. plus Washington, D.C. that has legalized the use of medical marijuana. And beginning on May 1st of this year, applications to run a medical marijuana dispensary within a city or town will be accepted for 30 days. Applications will require security details, financial details, and location details. Once you do have a doctor deem you qualified to seek cannabis as a treatment option, a patient registry ID card would cost $160. Arizona's Health and Service Department did keep the right to revoke an ID card or deny a card to a qualifying patient on grounds established in the rules, including the lack of evidence of a debilitating condition or if evidence of misuse of the substance is found. A sticking point, though, patients are not allowed to give marijuana to other patients and can be prosecuted if they do so.
Well, okay. They cannot give medicine to each other. This is Arizona, of course, where they've set up a situation where you're only allowed to cultivate your own medicine if you live 25 miles away from a dispensary, which kind of sucks if you live in Phoenix, you go out and invest a bunch of money in some grow lights, you set up a nice little closet, you're producing medicine for 18 months, and next thing you know, somebody's opening up a dispensary down the street. You're going to have to sell all your stuff or move 25 miles away. So that's already, you know, part of the law that got passed. But then to further punish the patients that can grow for themselves, that do happen to live in the country, let's say I'm a patient and I've got a cousin who's a patient who lives way out in the middle of nowhere in Arizona. He's way far away from a dispensary, so he's allowed to grow his own. My cousin's not allowed to give me any medicine. That's how much you want to secure the market for the dispensaries in Arizona to force me to have to go to the dispensary and not be able to get it for free from my friend or from my cousin or relative or whoever else might have the right to grow their own. Boy, they're just asking for trouble with this. Furthermore, $160 for a patient to get a medical marijuana card. I mean, I thought $100 in Oregon was bad. $160, that's a whole lot of money for a bunch of folks. And this last part about the doctors having to ID the condition and assume responsibility for follow-up on the treatment of that condition. That's also going to restrict this program and make it a lot harder for patients to be able to get their recommendation. For example, suppose that you're suffering from cancer, but your oncologist happens to work for or take a certain insurance or work for a certain hospital that does not allow the recommendation of marijuana due to some sort of federal catch or something like that. Now what are you going to do? The way this is written, it sounds as if you're going to have to go find a whole new oncologist. You won't be able to just go to some recommending doctor who can verify your cancer from your previous oncologist's soap notes. Boy, the Arizona Department of Health is just opening up a whole can of worms if they're going to go and enact regulations like this. I'd encourage them to take a look at the rest of the states that have active and functional medical marijuana programs and maybe learn how to put together a better set of regulations.
The state of Hawaii is the latest to take a serious look at decriminalization of marijuana. Two Hawaii Senate committees approved a bill to reduce the penalty for possession of up to an ounce of marijuana. The Committee on Judiciary and Labor, as well as the Committee on Health, approved Senate Bills 1460 on Friday that would establish a civil violation for less than an ounce of marijuana that would carry a fine of no more than $100. Senate Bill 1460 would clarify that medical marijuana patients and their primary caregivers may assert affirmative defense to prosecution, criminal, or civil, involving possession of 1 ounce or less of pot, and clarifies the definition of detrimental drugs to exclude 1 ounce or less of marijuana, making the offense for promoting a detrimental drug no longer applicable to an ounce or less of cannabis. The possession of more than an ounce of cannabis would also be excluded from substance abuse treatment requirements for parole prisoners and the authority of the courts to require a defendant to undergo and complete substance abuse treatment for a probation violation. If passed, a civil violation for possession of marijuana will not constitute a prior offense for the purpose of the conditional discharge law in the state. It would also remove the reporting requirement to the Board of Education for any students that are caught with an ounce or less of cannabis. Now, that if it does pass, since it has passed the first two committees, the bill will now advance to the Senate Ways and Means Committee. Now, for their part, the Senate Ways and Means has requested all interested parties in Hawaii to submit their written testimony as soon as possible for introduction into the record. Mm. Sounds like a great bill, Russ.
Yeah, as far as decrim bills go, this one's got the kitchen sink in it, man. That's got everything you'd want in a decrim bill, taking away not just the threat of jail, arrest, and a criminal record, but all those little, all those other sorts of paperwork things that can be a problem, and prior convictions, and being able to revoke your probation and parole. Wow, what a great job they're doing. Let's hope this one can get past the governor.
A woman in Queens who works at a bank is in trouble over the smell of some money she has been exchanging at her place of employment, Chase National Bank. The woman said her boss okayed a request for her to exchange $30,000 in 20 bills that reeked of marijuana in exchange for some cleaner $100 bills for a neighboring bank, according to a complaint filed in Brooklyn's federal court. She told her supervisors that the request was made from neighboring Bank of America. But when her supervisors called the Bank of America, they said they had made no such request. In fact, the Bank of America said that she had also come into their bank and made the same request, which they okayed. She was arrested last Thursday and charged with making illegal bank transactions of amounts that exceeded $10,000. Natanzia St. Rose of Queens Village was arrested by federal agents from a money laundering task force, and she was released on $150,000 of bail. St. Rose apparently believed that because the J.P. Morgan Chase and Bank of America manager and the bank the other bank that she was also working at thought that they were exchanging the cash as a courtesy to each other, so no currency transaction report was required. That's really the only charge they got her on. The criminal complaint states that St. Rose remains under investigation for, quote, possible money laundering and structuring of narcotics proceeds through financial institutions. That's a pretty heavy charge. Both banks are cooperating with investigators, and for her part, she says she has no idea why the money smelled like weed.
No, I can't explain why. This weed money is so smelly. Talk about truly money laundering here. They've got the smelly money that they're trying to exchange here for the less smelly money. This opens up a new wave of civil disobedience that we could think about, folks. We could start just taking our freshly harvested buds and just rub them all over all your cash. Just all your cash, your hundreds, your twenties, your fives, your ones. Just rub all over your cash so all your bills smell like marijuana. Let's start making making all American money smell like marijuana. You know, we did that story on the drug dogs earlier this week and how they are false alerting. They're only getting drugs 44% of the time. Let's bring that number even lower. Let's make it so that drug dogs are completely useless because all American money smells like marijuana. And anyone who's getting an alert is just being alerted for having cash in their pocket. I'm saying this kind of in a Jonathan Swift satirical sort of way, but there's a part of me that thinks maybe there's something to this making all of our money smell like ganja. I know something else that smells like ganja, and it sometimes takes money to get it. We're going to take a short break and enjoy a little bit of that. When we come back, we got your Daily Toker Tunes with Grateful Dread.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal.
Life ain't a box of chocolates gum. That's why people smoke weed and take bumps and drink way too damn much and get drunk and do it all over again first of the month.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420 friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Grateful Dread Public Radio, Summit, New Jersey's progressive peace station at gdreadradio.net. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Greetings, one and all. Grateful Dread with you from the studios of Grateful Dread Public Radio in Summit, New Jersey, wishing you all Irie times on an Irie Wednesday. Today, we've got music from Prophet Benjamin. He was born as Devin Samuel in Trinidad in 1978, and if what he says is true, his entire life and career have been about seeking God, doing right by his family, and uplifting the people of the world. Now those are big dreams for the child of a single mother, one who had to struggle for his everyday survival in the ghetto, one that featured hungry days and hungry nights. But young Devin believed, telling his mom, One day, I'm going to make it. In a 2006 interview with the Trinidad and Tobago Newsday, he said, I always had a love for singing, and I asked the Lord God, I said, God, make me to work for whatever work you desire for me in your vineyard. Give me the strength to fulfill your work, and I would like to be a singer, if you could make me sing words of righteousness to your people. And he's granted me both wishes. Inspired by the reggae artists Marlon Asher and Ja Melody, the young man made his way through the ranks and became a singer. In the past decade plus, he's scored numerous hits, including Delilah and Pretty Boy. Many of his songs talk about his faith as a devout Bobo Shanti Rasta, and that includes sacramental use of ganja. Today's toker track pays homage to that sacred herb. You can find it on the 2006 Caribbean Music Group release, Reggae Roadblock 3. The song is Field of Weed, and the singer, Prophet Benjamin.
Yeah, man! Nothing could do wrong with the thing, no. Nothing could do wrong with the thing. Feel a weed with a big bag of seed. You control the breed. Used to be feed and they use them in media. So bring the weed, yeah, the bobo got a hole. Feel a weed, maybe with a big bag of seed. You control the breed. Used to be feed and they use them in media. So bring the weed. Yeah. Boom! Come on, we want that to legalize. Go tell the police officers to stop criticize. We want a TV station now fi advertise. Because we tired of the lies and all the compromise. Babylon give we cocaine to smoke fi demoralize. And now them despise the weed, so me realize. And all the youth them who were fool, all the youth them wise. Them on the street cannabis and open up them eyes. That's why I want a whole feel a weed. May with a big bag of seed. You control the breed. Used to be feed and they use them in media. So bring the weed, yeah. I got a whole feel a weed. Maybe with a big bag of seed to control the breed. Used to be feed and they use them in media. So bring the weed, yeah. Got some in the east, some in the west. Got some in the north, some in the south. Over there, got some all about. Trotting like a lion, coming on no cub scout. For me, but me chalice, smoke come out, me nose and all me mouth. All the evil meditation get burn out. On me veranda with me 2 foot kick out. 2 ganja tree with a hammer for me and priest for rock out. Got some ganja city for me youth, them for suck out. Ganja make the rope for the goat where they tie out. Ganja make the cloth for the suit where they try out. Ganja make the mattress for the bed where they lie out. He can die out. The bobo got a hole. Feel a weed. May with a big bag of seed to control the breed. Used to be feed and they use them in media. So bring the weed. Yeah. Nothing couldn't wrong with the thing. No. Nothing couldn't wrong with the thing. Nothing couldn't wrong with the thing. No. Nothing couldn't wrong with Selassie I thing. Yeah, man. Well, if the marijuana run out, then the whole world will get a mental bum out on the block. Only cocaine bar where they come out, and the politician reach through all the youth where they kill out. After that, only dead bodies them bring out to the overdose of Satan herb where them give out and be passing God to die, yeah. So people watch out, whatever place you want, you just yell out. And everybody love the weed, so nobody not sell out. Everybody love the grape, so nobody not sell out. And you can't smoke me out. Me sweet can't run out, can't burn me. Me out the bobo grapes can't gone out. Because I got a whole feel a weed. May with a big bag of seed. To control the breed. Used to be feed and they use them in media. So bring the weed. Yeah, the bobo got a whole feel a weed. May with a big bag of seed. To control the breed. Used to be feed and they use them in media. So bring the weed. Yeah. Nothing couldn't wrong with the thing. No. Nothing couldn't wrong with the thing. Nothing couldn't wrong with the thing, no. Nothing couldn't wrong with Selassie I thing. That's why I want a whole feel a weed. Big bag of seed. Used to be feed. Put them in media. So bring the weed. Yeah, the bobo got a whole feel a weed. Maybe with a big bag of seed. You control the breed. Used to be feed. And they use them in media. So bring the weed.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
Oh, what a goof. Flame on, flame on if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Fire it up. Flame on, flame on if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Bully boy's a man. Flame on, flame on if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Flame on, flame on. Here's a lighter. If you burn blood, you prove you a writer.
In terms of legalization of drugs, I think that the battle, the war on drugs has been a utter failure.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure,
And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws. Criminalize our marijuana laws. The war on drugs has been a utter failure.
Criminalize our marijuana laws.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure.
Criminalize. The war on drugs has been a failure.
Normal Show Live, where we don't change our position on decriminalization in an election year. It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now here's your dose of cannabis science.
Welcome back, everyone, and we are really excited to get this segment started because, Paxabong hit Phil, the groundhog, smoked a joint and he saw his shadow, which means we get another 6 weeks of the major media saying that pot causes schizophrenia. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure, Russ.
The headlines are out there, CNN, WebMD, NPR, every little bit of alphabet soup out there on the cable channels and the news is trumpeting this headline, this study out of New South Wales. Matthew Large, I believe, was the lead researcher on this. Matthew Large of Prince of Wales Hospital in New South Wales, Australia, says, quote, "It is increasingly clear that marijuana is a cause of schizophrenia and that schizophrenia caused by cannabis starts earlier than schizophrenia with other causes," end quote. Let's have at it, Dr. Mitch. What do you think of this new study?
Alas, no. The clincher here is that there are no new data. I want to emphasize that. This is a meta-analysis, which means it takes the studies that were already out there and tries to combine them mathematically to make sense of it all. What you're not hearing in the media is that, in fact, this is probably early onset folks self-medicating. You can imagine somebody who's experiencing some symptoms of psychosis, particularly folks with less access to medical care, or folks who are already a little bit paranoid because of the disorder, and they're unwilling to go to a physician. They hear their friends are using cannabis and enjoying it. They do it too. They notice some mild improvements in their symptoms. They turn to it later when they have a psychotic break. What a surprise. They say, oh, they smoke cannabis first. That's the big issue. What burns my ass is that this same journal a month before had another article failing to replicate this CASPI data where we find folks with a special genetic risk, with a double humma-humma, and if they're heavily involved with cannabis early in life, they're more likely to develop schizophrenia. So all this malarkey about, oh, if you're a genetic risk, then you're really going to get it, isn't showing up in other data sets. The media isn't covering that in the least. The other finding in this big meta-analysis is that early onset of psychosis showed up for folks who were using drugs more generally, not just cannabis. And this makes much more sense pharmacologically. When you think about cocaine, amphetamine, and other drugs that work directly in the dopamine system, that's the system that schizophrenia is all about. And what a surprise, these folks are more likely to have an early onset. I'm concerned that the cannabis-related studies are really spurious, and they're confounded by use of amphetamine, Ritalin, Adderall, all these other stimulant drugs that people were, particularly in Australia, unwilling to fess up to, but more than willing to say that they used cannabis. We've got a big problem here. as we've seen time and again, none of us want children to have access to cannabis. And the way to get that access limited is, of course, not an underground market that never cards anybody, but a tax and regulated one where folks who are too young to be experimenting with this and folks who have psychoses in the family can be markedly more advised and essentially educated before they even purchase the plant.
Mm. You know, Matthew Large, this researcher here, even addressed what we just discussed about the self-medication. He said, quote, there's not so much evidence for the widely held view that those patients self-medicate with marijuana. Marijuana smoking almost always comes before psychosis, and few patients with psychosis start smoking marijuana for the first time, end quote. Is this a case then where they're just defining psychosis as their starting point at looking these people, rather than the onset of symptoms that would predate or presage the psychosis that's about to come?
That's it exactly, Russ. And as we've mentioned in the past, what often happens is they find a big record of people who've had psychotic breaks and then go back and see if they've reported cannabis earlier. But we have very poor assessments of these potential psychotic symptoms before these people used cannabis. And the few studies that do that, the measures are slightly biased against cannabis users. So I pointed out in the past, one of the big questionnaires for this, the schizotypal personality questionnaire, has an item that says, I use words in strange and unusual ways. Well, sure, schizophrenics certainly do that. They make words up, but that's part of the way that you manifest the diagnosis. But we also have a whole subculture here where people are kicking back with the chronic at 420. Well, what a surprise. People who do that may say, I use words in strange and unusual ways. In my data set, when you drop that item out, suddenly the link between schizotypia and cannabis use disappears. I'm concerned that there are comparable problems in these other data sets.
Yeah. You know, we've reported on this subject many times because the media keeps bringing it up. You know, whenever there's a study that claims there's some sort of link, it gets blasted 186 times across cyberspace. From different outlets. When there's a study that shows just the opposite, we rarely hear of it. And one of the things that we've always said in these pieces, you and I talking about this, is how worldwide the rates of schizophrenia and psychosis seem to stay stable, you know, at about 1% of the population, even if that population starts smoking a whole lot of weed, if a lot of them start smoking, or if they start smoking a lot of it, doesn't matter, it still stays the same. But one of the hypotheses they have here is that, yeah, sure, there's a certain 1% that are going to get psychosis, but these 1% are going to get it earlier, and then they'd have these extra 2 or 3 years of psychosis-free functioning that they would be losing out of because of their use of marijuana. My first thought on that is, if this were the case, wouldn't we see a lowering in the median age of psychosis onset when we have higher use of cannabis in a society?
In fact, Wayne Hall in Australia has made this same suggestion, and they have yet to detect this change in the median age of first onset. But he's suggesting that some new data are going to reveal that in the current younger cohort, this is the case. I haven't seen those data yet, and I'm a little concerned. In part, we go to so much effort now to try to identify psychosis earlier that it seems like if that is the case, it may be simply that we're better at identifying psychotic disorders than we were 20 years ago or something like that, so we have this other potential confound. And as Paul, I know, has emphasized time and again, we do have a subset of folks who really respond well to cannabis-based medicines in controlling psychotic episodes, and I think it may be a cannabidiol issue where Project CBD may be able to help us isolate who might be helped and who might not from this. And that, of course, then fits that self-medication hypothesis better. I feel like the critique of that self-medication that they offer in this meta-analysis is premature, in part because of how poorly we assess psychotic symptoms prior to anyone's cannabis use.
And bottom line on this, you know, I wrote about this as well and took my hand at it, and had a commenter who called me out on it because I made the statement that folks that may be suffering from mental illness or feel it coming on, while a lot of them are self-medicating with cannabis, use of cannabis by people suffering mental illness shouldn't be a first resort. They should get some definite professional help on that. I'm wondering if you can help me out of the the hole I've dug here and maybe explain what the actual risk is to people with a history of mental illness or who feel they may have a certain mental illness, and how they should entertain the notion of using cannabis to treat themselves.
In fact, cannabis is rarely my first choice for any of the more common mental illnesses. So we've talked in before about depression, anxiety, and PTSD. With depression, cannabis may help a subset of folks. A number of my friends who are in clinical practice say that the people who are using it are having more troubles in their practice, but that may be a different subset. But my first line of defense is really sounds corny, but a kind of bibliotherapy. Educate yourself about depression. If you have a mental health center where you appreciate 12 weeks of good hard work, taking a look at your own thoughts, how you behave during the day, the way you frame the events in your life, that can last a lifetime in the treatment of depression. And then cannabis is just to enjoy. It's not something you have to lean on in order to make sure you have a happy day. With anxiety, I've done this both on Facebook to some of our friends and in repeatedly in emails and in my published work. Anxiety is one of the psychological disorders that psychology really has mastered. And if folks, again, are willing to go see a therapist for a good couple of months and really put some effort in, you can literally tame this kind of thing and make it so anxiety is no longer debilitating, and then suddenly your cannabis again is just for fun. And the idea that cannabis is actually going to help anxiety is very dose dependent, very strain dependent, and not the most efficient way to get this. PTSD, I've just gotten those new data on that. Yes, a ton of people think that cannabis helps some of the symptoms of PTSD. I completely believe them. But compared to these exposure-based treatments, which I know are a drag, this is not going to last a lifetime the way that that kind of treatment can. And then again, cannabis is just for fun. It doesn't have to be for medication. And you're less likely to have these lingering symptoms of the emotional numbing, the distancing from your family, or these kind of freaking out experiences when you're in a big crowd. And then, what a surprise, you've basically worked hard for 3 months and kicked this disorder rather than felt like, oh, I have to lean on cannabis for this the rest of my life.
Hmm. Okay, I'm glad you set the record straight on that. And I know everyone out there was looking at these new headlines on this pot causes schizophrenia, and we're just waiting to hear your take on it. And I also wanted to point out the folks in the chat room, ever clever as the cannabis community is, pointing out that you mentioned the funny use of words by, you know, being a symptom of schizotypy on some of these surveys. They pointed out to Snoop Dogg's, you know, Izzle talk, and, you know, the scatting of the jazz singers going all the way back to the 20s, 30s, and 40s. Kind of an interesting comparison, don't you think?
Indeed. In fact, I think Louis Armstrong, right after his bust in Los Angeles for pot possession, he said, yeah, you know, it's a misdemeanor. The more I miss it, the meaner I get.
There we go. All right, we're taking your questions live here at 971-533-7111. If you got a question on cannabis science, history, health, culture, anything you might want to ask, Dr. Mitch is here to answer. And we've got questions coming from the chat room. Let me get to this first one from one of our listeners who asks, my girl has ganglion cysts. On her wrists. Cannabis seems to ease the pain and increase the range of motion in her wrist. Is this just psychosomatic, or is it a common use for medical marijuana? And I'll just add, I had the same problem in my wrist at one point. So tell us.
The bottom line on these is because of the muscle relaxing properties of particularly some of the indica strains, this does ease the pain. It really does make it easier. Nevertheless, these cysts are nothing to toy with. I feel like physicians are making a lot of strides in this domain in particular, and so checking into the options, including restraining the wrist for quite some time, or even considering surgery, is really worth it. Also, I want to emphasize that a lot of the over-the-counter meds, although, you know, we badmouth those a lot, are actually very helpful for these. So you got to watch your liver on it. But things like naproxen sodium and even good old aspirin seem to help a lot of folks with these symptoms as well.
Okay. We've got a question from Cannabis Carrie, and I'll let Carrie ask the question herself if she's got her microphone ready, about the Illinois high schoolers. Are you there, Carrie?
Is it because you didn't want to say the word wussier?
That's right.
Well, Dr. Mitch, I look into these news stories all the time, and today there was another story about six Illinois high schoolers that became ill and were hospitalized after eating some marijuana brownies. And these stories are happening almost weekly now. What is the deal? Are high schoolers just wussier since I went to high school? And then what exactly can an emergency hospital room do for someone who is feeling ill from marijuana?
Yeah, what can I say? We're not as tough as we were back in our day. No. The clincher here, unfortunately, is when you get to the bottom of a lot of these stories, the initial symptom is always tachycardia. Your heart is beating fast as a result of ingested cannabis. The story I joke about all the time is you have a brownie, you wait half an hour, and you think, oh, I'm not feeling anything, and end up eating more, when what you should be waiting is at least 2 hours after an oral ingestion like that. These folks do end up eating more. Then they get the munchies, and they say, oh, gee, what's around? Oh, there's brownies, right? And then suddenly they really have dosed way beyond anything anybody would recommend. This is yet again another argument for making sure we have tax and regulated market keeping the cannabis out of the hands of teens. But more importantly, when you get to the hospital, you have to fess up right away. People come in with tachycardia, but they don't want to say they just ate a gram of hash. And then the emergency room physicians are going apeshit trying to figure out what's wrong here, when in fact this is a pretty natural reaction to the consumption of cannabis. You would respond well to an antihistamine, take a couple Benadryl, watch some cartoons, everything's going to be fine with some reassurance and some friends. But instead, they're worried that maybe your heart has gone awry and are start considering some serious medical interventions when they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And really, the bottom line is, if folks could relax, distract, and basically have a mellow time, this wouldn't be aversive. We've talked about that time and again, how set and setting really determine the cannabis experience.
You know, it's kind of a joke we started with the kids today are wussier than they were back in the day. But, the kids today grew up going through DARE class. Do you think that makes a difference in their reaction when they feel something bad happening?
What's sad is I'm concerned that this goes in both directions. So they either say, oh, I'm not afraid, and I know that this is all lies, and so now I'm going to go try methamphetamine or something scary like that, or ironically get this outrageous hypersensitivity to it all. So a friend of mine's 10-year-old came home with her DARE essay that was just filled with all kinds of lies, and I thought, this is impossible now. She's never going to be able to, drink a new brand of water. She's so freaked out by every kind of ingestion.
When we do our discussions on marijuana law reform, and especially as we start talking about medical marijuana, we often compare and contrast that to pharmaceuticals that are prescribed for people and how they have, overdose reactions and these terrible side effects, and you can die from them and not cannabis and so on. We also politically look at, big pharma as a lobbying force wanting to keep cannabis down because we can grow it ourselves. But Pookie out in our chat room, I think she makes a good point, and she wanted you to address the point that not all pharmaceuticals are evil.
In fact, I'm a big fan of a whole bunch of pharmaceuticals, in part because they help us so much. If there weren't for antibiotics, a whole bunch of us would already be gone. If the psychotropic meds for schizophrenia hadn't been developed, I assure you things would be a whole lot worse for us now. And again, it's not a guarantee for everyone, just like cannabis isn't for everyone, but there are pharmaceutical drugs that are extremely helpful. There are other ones that drive me completely crazy, and I hate them. The data on the antidepressants do not impress me and never have. 2-year follow-up, they're about 5% better than a placebo. That just doesn't do it for me. Like anything, the pharmaceuticals, they have good, they have bad, and we should take the best and leave the rest.
All right. Trickster Phillips has a question. And folks, if we don't have enough time to get your question in, remember that you can email Dr. Mitch Earlywine at 420research@gmail.com. But I think we got time for a couple more here. Trickster Phillips wants to know, what positive or negative effects are there of using cannabis with bipolar disorder?
So this is yet another sort of under-investigated situation. I've got tons and tons of email, even just from addressing this recently, and I know people feel very strongly in both directions. The bottom line is, I think this has a lot to do with the way cannabis alters sleep, and sleep going awry is often the precursor, if you will, to a manic episode. I think people who smoke pot at intermittent times in the day often find themselves getting a little discombobulated, their sleep goes awry, and sure enough, that often predicts the onset of a manic episode. Nevertheless, folks who know that they're feeling a little amped up, smoke a sedating strain late at night or do other things to actually help improve their sleep, like have good sleep hygiene, make sure you're not exercising or having caffeine late in the day and things like that, they can get their sleep back on track and often have minimal hypomania or, you know, a manic episode that they can essentially appreciate and manage on their own. The clincher here is, I know the bipolar meds can be toxic. Lithium is extremely helpful but has side effects that people hate, and we just don't have enough evidence yet to say, oh, yes, medical marijuana is a good treatment for this.
Okay. Down to Vape has the question, why is the effect from smoking cannabis so much different from the effect of vaporizing cannabis, or is it?
In fact, I'm getting pretty consistent reports in my lab that the onset of the peak effect of vaporized cannabis is markedly later than it is for smoked cannabis. Hmm. Pharmacologically, I'm basically offering a bunch of conjecture, but nobody has really investigated exactly why. It may be that igniting the plant leads us to smoke in a different way, gets a whole lot of THC in there relatively rapidly, which I know people really, really like, but the vaporization delay is something that we can spread the word about, people can appreciate it, and most importantly, make sure that first vaporization experience doesn't end up being one that's more discombobulating than actually enjoyable. I think spreading the word about that is about all we can do. Everything else about why that happens, I'm afraid, is still just in the conjecture stage.
More stuff to research. I'm sure we can round up some volunteers for you, Dr. Mitch.
Indeed. Looking forward to getting that one approved.
Our final question here from Smitty Greensmile wants to know, love the name, by the way, wants to know what can be done to get more unbiased, fact-based research into the mainstream media.
I've been having this struggle time and again. I'm slowly but surely making some inroads. My hearty thanks to Stephanie Smith at CNN.com, who contacted me when this big meta-analysis came out instead of running to the drug czar's office. And I feel like slowly but surely we're all increasing credibility on this. I think that the clincher is spreading around to our local news sources. So I'm going to write a little letter to my newspaper saying, hey, don't forget about this. And if we all just sat down and did a letter to the editor, if your paper covered that story and said, you know, this isn't exactly right, and I really would love to hear more both sides on these kinds of issues, even if they don't print it, they get the message. And slowly but surely, the print media and then eventually the radio and even television will take this on. We've made a lot of progress, but we can certainly make a lot more.
I agree, and that's what we'll be doing here every day at Normal Show Live. And every Wednesday, Dr. Mitch Earlywine will join us for this Cannabis Science segment. Thanks for answering our questions. Remember, the email address is 420research@gmail.com. And we'll talk to you next week, Dr. Mitch.
Looking forward to it. Bye now.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record. It's that freedom. Freedom.
I'm free to do whatever. You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
radical rant.
You remember a few years ago when Bush's drug czar said that finding marijuana possessors in jail was like finding a unicorn?
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that. But finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist.
This is a tactic that the drug warriors use all the time to say that, you know, there's really just not that many people in prison or in jail for marijuana. So it's really, really not that big a deal. I mean, it's not like we're really arresting over 850,000 people a year.
We didn't arrest 800,000 marijuana users. That's the same lie I just talked to your colleague back there about. We arrest people because they are usually involved with violent offenses, and they're involved with things like driving while intoxicated, because they have, and if it's an issue of possession, I would ask anybody here, we have a booklet if you want to see it, because this idiocy is repeated so often.
This idiocy is repeated so often. The 850,000 people arrested for marijuana charges, you know, 89% of them on possession alone. They're not really arrested. These are not the droids you're looking for, according to John Walters. Now, that was back in 2008, and in a recent radical rant, I did a cover of this this flyer going out from the National Association of Drug Court Professionals, written in 2011, that makes a lot of the same points. You know, there's less than 1% of people in prisons or in jail or there for marijuana possession. It's really not something we need to worry about. So I would like to bring you this story to remind you that it's not the incarceration for marijuana that's the problem. It's the arrest itself for marijuana that is the problem. This is dated February 8th. The American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California today condemned a recent brutal beating by two Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputies of a detainee at the Twin Towers Correctional Facility, part of the county jail system. The violent attack on January 24th on James Parker, detained on a nonviolent marijuana charge, was witnessed by ACLU of Southern California's Esther Lim, who is assigned to monitor all county jails. Quote, "We believe Mr. Parker's beating is not an isolated incident," said Hector Villagra, incoming executive director of the ACLU of Southern California. "Rather, it highlights the rampant violence that continues to plague the county's jails and demands court intervention to protect detainees from brutal attacks and retaliation. That the ACLU Southern California monitor witnessed a brutal attack in plain sight is alarming and can only lead us to conclude detainees are subject to even greater cruelty when no one is looking," end quote. That's right. This monitor there, this Esther Lim from the ACLU of Southern California, the whole reason she was there in the Los Angeles County Jail is to witness the conditions there because of a court order, because of lawsuits in the past alleging this brutal treatment of prisoners in the LA County jail system. So you've been told on, you've been busted for beating down the prisoners. They send a monitor from the ACLU, and while that person is watching you, you still continue to beat down the helpless prisoners. According to the story here, according to the report, this James Parker was face down on the ground, not resisting, helpless. According to the Esther Lim, she said he looked like a mannequin down there that they were practicing on. It didn't look like a real human being. He was so motionless. But they kept saying, stop resisting, and tasing him, putting a knee in his back and punching and beating him as he's laying there in front of the court-appointed monitor. Again, like the ACLU says here, who can imagine what's going on when the court-appointed monitor isn't there in the ACLU's jail system? This is horrendous and wrong, and not just for cannabis consumers. No prisoners deserve to be abused like this. No prisoners deserve to be mistreated. But no cannabis consumers deserve to be prisoners in the first place. This kind of treatment is part of the punishment. This is why they don't. This is why they talk about not putting cannabis consumers in jail in prisons for a long period of time, because they realize the punishment of having to go to jail, the punishment of getting arrested, is punishment enough, and it's too much punishment and it's a punishment that's not deserved by those of us who are responsible, law-abiding, tax-paying, adult cannabis consumers. There is no reason to continue this cruelty, this torture of our people in the jail systems, and ruining their lives and affecting their chances of going to school, and affecting their chances of getting good jobs. jobs and taking care of their families, all because they chose a safer alternative to alcohol for their relaxation, all because they chose a safe, effective, non-toxic, non-addictive herb to relieve their medical conditions, all because they perhaps believe in a God whose sacrament's a little too popular. This has to end. It's got to start in Los Angeles County. It's got to start in all the major cities and go all across this country. And those of us working here at Normal will never stop until marijuana is legalized for all adults and this cruelty ends. Thanks for joining us here at Normal Show Live. Get well, Ganja John. We missed you here on the show. For Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ for the Normal Foundation, live here in Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios, wishing you a happy day. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it.